Hello, everybody. My name is Casey Lee, and this is me talking to people. Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Casey Lee. Welcome to Casey Talks to People, the podcast where I talk to people. Now, this is it. This is the season finale of season one of Casey Talks to People. It's been an incredible season. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I am quite proud of myself, if I do say so myself, for actually putting out an episode every week. I've been very thankful to all the guests. I want to give a big shout out to all the guests. In fact, I'm gonna just read off every one of the guests that was on season one just quickly here, as my phone can't unlock Face ID through a pop filter. I think I discovered that sometime earlier. But anyways, so I want to give a big shout out to... Oh, God. This is what happens when you don't prepare that well. Okay.
Technology.
Technology sucks. Okay. I would like to thank Aaron Sedanker, Eric McCray, Jason Connell, Norm Daigle, Riley Stanueva, Jeff White, Elias Hage, Jason Peltzer, Sarah Danielli, Dave Chapman, Curtis Judd, Gabrielle Tapuk, Isabel Gann, Dave Hamill, Andrew Monroe, Cassie Ait, Steve Cody, Anil Dalari, Carl Lombard, Kyle Turk, Jack Wu, Aaron Blasky, and Jamie Petten, and of course, my guest today. But before I get into
that... The best for last.
Yeah, it's got to say the... This is what Eric was just saying. Save the heavy hitters for last. So big thanks to all my guests. Season two is already in the works. I won't be taking a huge hiatus, but I thought it'd be great to give myself a little bit of a break as my guests were catching up with me. So I wanted to take a little bit of a break. Listen to subscribe to the podcast, follow me on Twitter at @CaseyLee23 for updates on when the official season two premiere will be. There is no official date yet, but I do promise you I am working on it. I am booking guests. I am starting to line up some people for season two. I'm really happy about that, but really happy how the podcast has gone. You know, I have a lot of ideas. And I experiment a lot. And some of these actually take off. And one of these, I think this one has taken off and it's stuck, and I'm really happy with where it's been. So big thanks for everybody's listened. Big thanks for everybody who has subscribed. Big thanks for everybody who's commented, who has submitted reviews. It really helps a lot. Even while I'm off, if you guys can promote this, I'd really, really appreciate that. Okay, but that is not why we're here today. I don't know why I dropped my piece of paper. I still need my notes.
Dramatic effect
for people who are not in the room. We are here today for my guest. Now, let me tell you about my guest. My last guest of the season is somebody who fits into the camp of my MBO guests. So, again, I basically have two camps of guests, either LSpark guests or my Byward Office guests, with a little couple of people who don't fit into either of those categories. But this guy is definitely someone who fits into my MBO bank of guests. He was one of those guys who would kind of come into the office quietly. He would sit on the couch, and to this day, most of the time, you can find him on that couch, do his work, and move on. And I didn't really know anything about him, didn't really converse with him. I later find out that as I'm talking to him and as people are telling me about him, that he's been around the block in Ottawa. He definitely has a lot of connections in Ottawa. I would be chatting with my friends and be like, yeah, you know Dave Hicks? I'm like, oh, yeah. I just ruined.
The big reveal.
But I guess who's listening to this podcast without reading the title? I don't know. Anyways, well-connected in the city. Today, he does everything from marketing to software development to a lot of other stuff that I actually don't know about. We always have great conversations on the fly. I ask him for advice, and we get into these great chats, and he gives me his 2 cents, and which I always appreciate. But the reality is, as much as I talk about him right now, like I know him that well, I actually don't know a lot about Dave Hicks.
It's a mystery.
Never really sat down with you, Dave. And this is what this is all about. This is the first guest we've had on the podcast that was actually requested. So fellow podcaster Glenn Schmelsley was like, you got to get Dave Hicks on that podcast. He didn't say it literally in that tone, but he said, you got to have Dave Hicks on the podcast. I'm like, yeah, I mean, like, you know, we definitely know each other. Definitely want to get him on. So finally, 24, I'm happy we were able to squeeze him into season one. 24 episodes later, welcome to Dave Hicks.
Hello, Casey. And I got to say, you know, we've worked in the same office now for, what, 2, maybe 3 years?
Yeah, and 4 maybe, actually.
You're like freaking me out a bit here because you're like, you've got this total radio voice thing going on. Normally, you're pretty laid back and chill, and you're very animated right now.
So right.
It's like a whole new Casey.
Well, it's funny because, like, I do feel like it's not my natural state, but it's a very close second, I would say. Like, my two natural states are basically introverted, shut off from the world, don't want to talk to anybody. Like, I just want to be in you know, I want to be coding. I want to come in on a Saturday, work from 9 to 5 and just go home and or edit for hours just by myself. But then a close second to that is the polar opposite of that, which is I want to be in front of a crowd of like 500 people and like giving a inspirational talk or something like that.
They're like, hey, it's a Casey Lee show.
Exactly. But nothing in between. Nothing in between, though. But it has been since, I think, 2015, actually, that we started working here.
It's been quite a while. Yeah. I mean, I was probably the first, if not one of the first people at my Byword office. Yeah. And I remember you came in about a year into that, I think.
Well, I think so. Apparently the story, like, I don't know, like maybe the dates are all messed up in everybody's heads, but the way that Eric tells it, and I don't know.
The my Byword office lore.
Yeah, exactly. The thing that's it. The way that he tells it is that he was like, he had built my Byword office and, you know, basically put it up and nobody was calling. And he was basically on the cusp of shutting it down. And then you gave him a call.
I like grabbed them from the edge of the bridge.
Did you know him at that point?
No. So there's actually a really funny story here, which is the space we're in right now, where we're recording this podcast, 201, the room. I actually used to work here back in 2010 for a different startup.
Right.
Many years later, I think 2015, I ran into Eric at a networking event. As we're talking, like I know a fair number of people because I go to these things.
Yeah,
not as much recently, but certainly in the past. I ran into Eric and started chatting with him, and you know he was talking what he was doing, and he's like, "Oh, I'm setting up in this space." I'm like, "Oh my god!" Like I used to work in that building, I worked in 201.
Wow.
He set up in 204,
yeah,
which used to be a travel agency.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And so I'm like, oh, I'd love to come by and see what you've done with the space. And, you know, we exchanged pleasantries. And I said, well, give me your email. And next time I'm downtown, I'll shoot you an email and we can set up time. He's, oh, my email doesn't work. And I'm like, well, we can't have that. So we're going to have to fix that for you.
Right.
So I went in to fix his email. It turned out to be a bit more of a struggle. You know, supposed to be a 5-minute job. And, you know, 2 hours later.
Sure. Story of a consultant's life.
Yeah, pretty much. And, you know, I'm not just doing this so I help someone out. And when I came in to see him, I said, you know, space is great. Looks wonderful. And he said, well, I'd like to pay you back for like the time that you spent to fix the email. But, yeah. You know, obviously I'm a new business and don't have like a lot of cash on hand, but if you want to come in and, you know, just work here, that'd be fine. So I said, that'd be great for me. Cause you know, I, as a consultant freelancer, I've been working at home for years.
Right.
And it's just nice to be able to get out of the house
sometimes.
To be able to sit somewhere and focus on work. Cause you know, when I'm at home, it's not like I'm watching Netflix or whatever when I'm supposed to be working, but there's always all sorts of distractions.
Oh,
right?
Totally.
You know, oh, you know, I want to do this, but before I do that, I got to clean my dishes.
Yeah. Right? I mean, when I used to work at home, and occasionally I still do this, when I do work from home, is I would have this ritual where ultimately I would take 2 to 3 hours off in the middle of the day because I would work till about 10 or 11 and then I'd make myself a nice lunch, which would last about half an hour, like just the making of the lunch. And then I would eat lunch, which would last another half an hour. And then I'd take a nap for about an hour. And then I'd get up all groggy and take about half an hour to get back into work.
It sounds about right. Yeah. I find like that one of the challenges of working for yourself is you don't have the same sort of regulation.
Yeah.
In terms of your time as you do like working in an office environment. And with myself, one of the reasons I like working in, you know, a shared office space or an office space in general is it puts some structure on my day. Left to my own devices, I sort of turn into a vampire.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I end up working like, you know, 10 o'clock at night until 4 in the morning type stuff, which is good. It can get a lot done and be very productive time because there's very few interruptions.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's, you know, not great from like just a, you know, a human social sort of interaction type thing. You know, you do that for a week or so and you sort of start getting a little crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
So said, being able to come into a space in more regular kind of business hours is good for me because, you know, I'm not a morning person. And, you know, you probably know this because you very rarely see me in the office before like 11 o'clock type of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But I find coming here, it gives me some structure to the day. I can come in and focus on things and get things done. And, you know, also like the other aspect is and the reason we're here today is there is a social aspect, even though we don't work together in terms of like, you know, as a company or as employees or coworkers, you know, having other people that are in sort of your space, you know, you can interact with each other, you can talk to each other. You know, some of the things you do overlap with the things I do. So, you know, I've got questions, we can bounce things off each other.
Totally.
You know, or just talk about business and sort of the condition of being self-employed and owning your own business. It's always good to sort of be able to talk to somebody who understands that.
Totally. It's funny because, like, I you know, when I first start kind of got into the space of, like, you know, doing your own thing, running your own thing or whatever, like consulting, whatever you want to call it, I definitely was resistant to other people that were in that space. I don't know what it was. It was like maybe a pride thing, maybe a I think I'm better than everybody kind of thing. But as I started, like, chatting with other people who are like, oh yeah, I hate sending out contracts too, or I hate pricing, or I don't know how much to charge for this and all this stuff, as I was like, it actually really was a super, like, I don't know what the word is. It's not really refreshing, but, like, eye-opening to me to be like, why was I so closed off from this, right? Because, like, that kind of community is actually super helpful.
Yeah, I find one thing that happens quite often is, like, everyone is very much concerned about presenting, you know, the right face. Like, you know, oh, I'm successful and I'm busy and everything's going great. And, I mean, that's not the reality of owning your own business. Like, there are times when things are tight and you're having trouble and, you know, maybe you're having trouble getting paid or what have you. And so I think there is a great value in people who are in that sort of milieu being able to sort of talk with each other and, honestly, you know, like, well, yeah, like, I hate doing invoicing or, you know, contracts suck, or I have a real hard time, like, keeping myself organized, or I need a new accountant or whatever. And to be able to talk about it, like, frankly, like, yeah, like, I screwed up my taxes and I need help.
Exactly.
You know,
right?
Who do you know who can help me with that?
Yeah.
But I find there is, like, this reluctance with a lot of small business people to sort of present that sort of, I guess, vulnerable side, or to even present, like, the failure of aspects of your business. I know there's, like, fuck up nights here in Ottawa, which is great, and it's just nice to sort of be able to say, oh yeah, you know, like, you know, we always see, like, the success story in the public, like, sort of presentation.
Totally.
You know, oh yeah, like, you know, everything's great, but, like, I've been doing this for 10 years now, and I can tell you, like, not all 10 years have been awesome. It's taken a while to get to this point for me. And, you know, I will tell people, it's like, yeah, like, you know, the first couple of years of business were kind of lean, like, things were tight at times, you know, and it's good for people to understand that. So, like, when they're in their first or second year of running their own business, that, you know, A, they can be prepared for that.
Yep.
And also know that it's normal. Like, it's not unusual for businesses to sort of have ups and downs and peaks and valleys, and that, you know, to be prepared for those things and to know that there are resources available to sort of, even if just to talk to other people about the pains and miseries that you have from day to day running things. And there's also good stories too, but.
Yeah, and that's, it's so true though what you're saying though, because, like, I do think, I mean, don't get me wrong, I do love the celebratory stuff where it's like, you know, there are people on stage, there are people on podcasts, all these kind of things where people are talking about all the good times. But yeah, it is very much a, I feel like the very few times that I've talked about my business in public in that kind of setting where we're talking about, oh, you know, it's great, I started my own business and it's running on all this stuff like that. It's such a small, like percentage of time that I feel that. Most of the time I'm feeling like, oh my God, like, what are we going to do for revenue this month? What are we going to do for customers this month? How are we going to grow? Oh man, like, 7 years have passed and I'm nowhere near where I thought I would be.
As Casey's saying this, I'm just sitting here reflexively nodding my head. I'm like, yes, yeah, right, yes. Right.
Okay, so just to give the audience some context. So I recently met up with a couple of friends of mine and they listened to the podcast. And one of my friends said, this was her number one complaint about the podcast, which was, I do not give enough context in terms of what people are actually doing on the podcast. We've been talking for 13 minutes here, Casey Lee and Dave Hicks, and a lot of people don't know who Dave Hicks is and what he actually does. So I literally want to call this segment Explain It for Sarah, because Sarah's frustrated that she doesn't know what's going on. So in this segment of Explain It for Sarah, what is it that Dave Hicks actually does? What do you actually do? Like, how do you describe what you do today?
Okay, I'll do my best, Sarah. I mean, I do a combination of different things, but I'd say probably focusing about 50% on web development, and then about 25% on digital marketing strategy and all the different things that encompasses, and then 25% sort of other, and the majority of that would sort of be design work or branding work. I have a background in graphic design, so I still sort of dabble in that from time to time. And then just some weird stuff, like I do some microelectronics work, you know, Arduino type things. So
And you're a solo guy. You're doing your own thing, your own business.
Yep.
Consulting with various companies and clients and stuff like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, where my business is at now is a majority of the work I do is actually for other agencies or, you know, other larger, I guess, freelance or consulting groups.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so maybe like an organization that's got five or six people.
Right.
Instead of just like a one-man show like myself. And, you know, they come to me and say, oh, you know, we need some help with this particular thing. Or maybe they're just too busy to take it on themselves. So I'll sort of step in and act as like, you know, the sixth person in the organization to help them through that. And that works pretty well. And allows me to focus on, I guess, the doing of things. So I can focus on, you know, actually articulating things or planning things or running strategy sessions or building websites. And because the agency is sort of handling the business end of it, like they've got the client management, they're doing invoicing and the billing. And I find that sort of works well for me. I didn't get into business to sort of run a business. You know, I don't want to do my taxes. I don't want to do payroll. And by working with an agency, that helps me do that.
Well, let's rewind a bit to how you kind of eventually settled on where you are today. So like, let's rewind like way back. So where are you from?
I'm actually originally from Ottawa,
Okay. Strangely
enough. I mean, I was born here.
Yeah.
My father was in the military, though. So
Okay. We
moved around like a lot growing up, like pretty much every 2 years, like clockwork, pull up stakes and moved. And just by nature of what my father did, you know, we had some pretty weird postings.
Right. So like, where did you end up?
Oh, man. Like, I was born in Ottawa. We were in Kingston for a while. We were down in the U.S. for a bit. Lived in Bermuda for a while.
Oh, wow.
We were way up north in the Nunavik in the Northwest Territories.
How crazy.
Yeah.
And this is like every like 2 years you're like moving?
Every couple of years, yeah. Wow. And, you know, as you can imagine, that's kind of tough as a kid.
Sure.
Growing up. And the older you get, the harder it is to sort of, you know, get dropped into a new environment. You know, here you're 14, 15 years old. You got to make new friends. You got to fit in. And just as sort of you're getting sort of your stride there, it's like, okay, we got to move again.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was sort of like growing up.
Were you only child or?
No, I got a sister. Yeah, she's 2 years younger than me.
Right.
She lives out in BC and has for quite some time, actually. But yeah, so it was growing up, I got to see like a lot of different places, different cultures, different people, different, you know, different countries even.
Did you appreciate that aspect or were you kind of too young to care at that point?
I definitely did. And yeah. I think like the older I got, like the more I sort of appreciated having that sort of, you know, a range of different experiences growing up. You know, I can't imagine, you know, coming from a position where like, you know, you born and lived and die in the same city.
Yeah.
although the strange side effect of that is like, I really don't have any desire to travel.
Right.
I've traveled a lot, like just in life. I did a lot of travel for work, sort of in previous careers.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm at the point where it's like, yeah, like I don't mind traveling. I enjoy it.
Yeah.
But I don't really have a strong desire to travel.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. I mean, obviously for completely different reasons. I'm not like I had the luxury that my parents took me on a lot of trips as a kid, like went on a lot of tours and like, you know, traveled like to Hong Kong every 2-3 years. And when I grew up, yeah, I'm same thing. I don't actually... I mean, again, I do enjoy traveling. And every time I go on a trip, it's like, man, that was great. And I'm always better for the experience. But I never think about initiating it. I'm never like, oh, I want to go here. I want to go here or whatever, right?
Like, I always used to enjoy, like, when I traveled for work, I used to like sort of having, like, a day to myself
right.
in a city and just do, like, kind of mundane stuff. Like, you know, I don't need to go and do the tourist thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I just want to go somewhere, walk around, take a look, sort of get a feel for things. And I always enjoyed that a lot. And I find it doesn't translate well to doing that with somebody else. Like you just can't sort of chill out and read a book in a cafe somewhere, just watching the street scene in Seattle or whatever. Like, you know, I enjoy it. It's kind of nice and relaxing. But, you know, I find when you're traveling with somebody else, you're sort of like, you know, okay, we got to do something. You know, just sort of walking around is maybe not sort of exciting enough for other people.
Right. So you traveled around a lot as a kid. You moved around a lot as a kid. I mean, so was there any point towards like, say, like in high school, were you still moving around like every couple of years? Or?
No. So we came back here when I was 15 years old you know, dropped into grade 10 at that point in time. And, you know, grade 10, grade 11 type of situation. And my father got posted again down to the States. And so I was like, enough. Like I'm staying here.
Well, you're a little bit older at that point, right?
Yeah, a little bit older. I was staying here to sort of finish off my school year or school, I should say.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. So I stayed here in Ottawa and moved out on my own. I ended up actually dropping out of high school because, you know, being like 18 years old and trying to manage like your own life and, you know, a job and pay for expenses and things like that just didn't happen. And I ended up going back like a year later and finishing my schooling off.
Oh, crazy.
Yeah. So it was, I don't know. It was an interesting experience and certainly a bit of a challenge. Like,
was dropping out like a... I mean, it's funny because I talked to... do you know Steve Cody?
No.
He runs like Better Software Company and Ruckify. So he is a college... sorry, not college. High school dropout. And I asked him, like, was this a hard decision or whatever? But he just said, no. I mean, it's just... It was so natural. Like, that was my answer. Like, school wasn't working out for me, and I just dropped out.
It was not like school wasn't a challenge. It wasn't like I dropped out because my grades sucked. Yeah, yeah. I just, it was the hard part was, you know, I was living on my own, and I just found it was difficult. It was incompatible. Like, you know, being in university and having a job, and like, there's some understanding there that you're sort of a functional adult and that sometimes you're not going to be there all the time.
Yeah.
But high school just wasn't set up for that. And all like some teachers were very supportive.
Yeah.
In general, it wasn't like the administration wasn't like super cool with it. So,
right.
You know, once you've got so many absences or so many lates or whatever. And I mean, I was commuting from Mechanicsville all the way to Orleans because I wanted to finish high school in my own high school with my friends. And, you know, you can't go to, like, you know, the vice principal and say, well, you know, you've been late like 3 times this week.
Right.
I was like, well, yeah, because I'm commuting from the other side of, I'm not even supposed to be at this school.
Yeah.
And, you know, so like I was certainly committed to a point, but it just life got in the way, I guess.
What, I'm curious. So like that time that you took off, did you just like get a job or what did you?
Yeah, I worked full time. I worked in retail.
And okay. So what made you decide to go back?
Well, I mean, obviously I wanted to finish my high school.
Oh, okay.
I did take, I took like a couple of night school courses and I just did the math. I was like, it's going to take me like the rest of my life to do this. And I just found like the experience of night school was a little bit depressing. Like keeping in mind, like, you know, night school is great. It's got its point. But like, you know, I didn't want to be like, you know, 18-year-old and you're, you know, the guy sitting beside you is like 65 or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it was just I didn't find it was the right environment for me.
Right.
So I took a year off. I went back to school, finished that off, you know, did like, you know, sort of the victory lap type situation, grade 15. And then, you know, graduated and I'm done. And, you know,
right.
I took another year off and then I went to university.
So what university did you go to?
U of O.
Okay. And did you, at that point, like, what did you know what you want to do at that point?
I did actually. I was very like heavily into art.
Okay. Like in school. High school.
Yeah.
Right.
And, I sort of said, well, I could like apply for fine arts and had a portfolio and all that put together. But decided sort of at the last minute that, you know, something that would be slightly more employable than just being like a fine arts major might be like, you know, art history, you know, and maybe pull that through into like something in, you know, curatorial sciences. I don't know. I mean, still.
But did you have an interest in that as well? I mean,
very much.
Okay.
Yeah. Very much.
Do you still to this day? Like, do you like, you know, art galleries and stuff like
still
that?
Still like, do. Yeah. I mean, I guess in a less formal sense.
Yeah.
It's
just kind of like casual, like enjoying.
Yeah. I mean, I'll just give an example on, Canada Day. I'd come downtown with my son, to do some, you know, just walking around and we ended up, walking sort of from the far end of Wellington Street all the way across and then up in the Hull. And I just sort of gave him like a quick architectural tour of Ottawa.
Cool.
And it was kind of interesting for me in the sense of like being able to pass on that, some of that knowledge.
Yeah.
He has interest in design as well. But just like how much I remembered about that. So, you know, oh, this building is in this style and, you know.
That's crazy. Yeah. Just because you learned that stuff and you'd observed it, or you actually learned about specific buildings around Ottawa?
Well, like some of it was like specific buildings and some of it just like, yeah, like, you know, this is postmodern and this is why it's postmodern and explain some of the attributes of that and sort of, you know, then explain like, hey, well, this, you know, the Bank of Canada building, you know, Arthur Erickson, and then you've got, you know, the National Gallery of Canada over here. It's also a postmodern building.
Yeah.
You know, totally different set of architects, with Musty Safdie and a few other guys. I can't remember their names.
Right.
But I was just like, what surprised me there is it had been like so long since I've sort of thought about that stuff in a really formal way, but just being able to ring it off really quickly.
Well, I always love when these like hidden banks of knowledge come out because like a lot of times it is like they get hidden because the opportunity, like it'd be really random if like, you know, me and you are sitting on the couch talking about software development. And you're like, oh, did you know this building was, you know, from this era? It's always nice when there's like an opportunity to actually share another part of you, right? Like, and a little piece of knowledge that you had forgotten kind of existed, right?
I mean, I think too, it like helps to sort of make you a more well-rounded person.
Totally, yeah.
I mean, you know, some of that knowledge, information, whatever, may articulate itself through something else that you do, may help you solve a problem or something like that. So it's not just useless trivia.
Yeah.
It actually is kind of something that might be usable in your day-to-day life.
Yeah. Well, it gives you like different perspective on like kind of what you do, right? Like I always love when I'm like dealing with clients and they're in a space that they don't expect me to know about, right? I actually get it a little bit with video. Like the video work that we do, it's different now, but when I was starting out, not a ton of people knew that I was also doing software. So I'd be interacting with a lot of tech clients and they'd be like, oh, like, hey, you know software or whatever, right? And it's just like, also like it happens with like music too. Like I'm big into music and play a bunch of instruments. So when I deal with a client who's like,
I didn't know you played an instrument.
Yeah, most people don't because again, in my professional life, it's not like I'm going to bring out a guitar or piano and start playing in front of you.
Are you like the guitar guy at a party? Like,
I was that became till I saw. So when I was younger, for sure. Like there's a very vivid memory I have in Vancouver. So I did film school in Vancouver, right? And I think it was like 1 month in or whatever. I go to this party where all of my classes
and you brought your guitar.
I didn't bring my guitar. There was a guitar there. And all it takes is like one person to enjoy it, right? You're like, there's this one guy who seemed to like what I was playing. So then I just took over and clearly like 90% of the room was like, who is this guy? I hate this guy.
There's a guitar guy.
Yeah, exactly. And so over time you get to a point where you're like, oh, I don't want to be that guy. So you quietly, you don't do it as well. Like, so I mean, last couple of years I've been busking every now and then in the market, actually.
What?
Yeah. So like very few times. Like literally I could probably say like 5 times in the last like 2-3 years I've busted in the market. But anyways, yeah. I mean, I feel like those kind of things. I always love...
That goes back to like, you know, oh, business is a bit tight. I better go down and like, you know, put my hat out.
Times are tough. Don't tell my staff that I need to busk to make payroll or something exactly. Like that, right? But yeah, I mean, so you went to university.
I went to university, but I dropped out of that too.
Okay.
So
you went for art history.
So there's a longer story there. I got accepted into art history at University of Ottawa,
yeah.
Which I suspect probably isn't the most sterling art history program, but you know, it was close by.
Sure.
And then like in August, I got a letter that basically said like, hey, sorry, but we've canceled your program.
Oh.
So, you know, you can feel free to apply to general arts type of thing.
Right.
And this is what led to my taking a year off, sort of between high school and university. And then I went back actually and just studied English at that time, because that was another interest of mine.
Right.
And I did that for a year. And then, you know, we've been 94, 95 time frame. A friend of mine, actually, and a buddy of his, they had started a computer company. And they were growing quite rapidly. And he came to me. We'd gone out for beers. And he said, hey, you know, like, you know stuff about computers. And
did you?
I did, yeah.
Okay, so while you're interested in arts, but you are also interested in computers.
Yeah, well, we always had like my dad's kind of a computer guy,
yeah.
And we always had a computer growing up. And I mean, I'm a few years older than you,
yeah.
You know, so like this was like early days of computing. So like to have a computer was like a pretty crazy thing.
Sure.
And so like we just had one in the house, and you know, you'd spend the weekend. You know, you get these computer magazines, and you have to be really old to remember this, but you get these computer magazines, and they'd have like code in the magazine. Like,
oh, really?
There was no real internet at the time.
Super cool magazine.
Yeah, you get a magazine like with like here's a game, right?
Okay.
And you'd sit down and be like, you know, 5 pages of code in BASIC, and you type this damn thing in. It would take,
oh, really?
You spent like the whole day, and then you go to run it, and of course it wouldn't work. You have to debug it and stuff like that.
That's so funny.
And so that was like, you know, an experience for me growing up, and I just thought, oh, it's kind of normal.
So you're actually like coding like that early, basically.
Well, like coding, like you're typing in someone else's code.
But you're effectively coding.
Yeah, but yeah. You're doing it, right?
Yeah.
And then you sort of. Over time, you'd learn just through osmosis, and then, you know, you'd go in and edit things, or you could cheat, you know, you have like an adventure game, and because you type the thing in, you sort of knew like, okay, this is the structure of things, and
yeah,
if I want to bypass this whole stuff and skip to level 3, I can just, I can do it this way. So that, you know, that was sort of an experience I had growing up. And so, yeah, like I was kind of familiar with computers. And, yeah. And I say like familiar, like I wasn't like a computer expert.
But I feel like most people, I'm assuming most people around you had not read those magazines or had touched anything close to code.
No, I mean, like I took like some programming courses
in
high school, Pascal and a bit of C type of thing. And it was interesting to me. And like, this is, we're talking like early 90s here. So like the internet existed, but mostly like at the university level and certainly in the defense down in the States. But like, it wasn't like a consumer thing at that point. And I remember like there was one guy in like one of my computer classes, he was like a hardcore, like, you know, like 90s nerd. Like, you know, back when like everyone used to beat up nerds, now it's like cool. And like, you're if you're a nerd, it's a good thing and you're probably rich, et cetera.
Yeah.
But it was like, you know, this poor guy got tormented, but he had like actually, we had a modem at school and he managed to like dial into something and was like showing people how you could like download stuff, you know,
crazy.
Games or whatever.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. And I sort of promptly forgot about it for a couple of years. And my dad then got like the internet himself, and this was down in the States after I'd moved out. And I was like, oh, that's a pretty cool thing. So, you know, when I got back, I had a computer that I used for doing schoolwork. It was a generic 486. And I had to like, okay, I got to buy a modem. So, you know, if you buy this like 14.4 modem, costs like $200 in, you know, 1994 dollars, which is like, I don't know, like $1,000 nowadays. It was just nuts. And get this thing installed physically and the drivers and, you know, and, you know, got it working and then was able to get on the internet and start doing stuff there. So like I had like a familiarity and I guess it's a willingness to try.
Yeah.
So this guy came and he's like, yeah, you know about computers, right? And I go, yeah, I guess, like, you know, because he's like, yeah, we're selling a lot of these things. We need some help, like actually like setting them up and like, you know, configuring them.
Oh, it was
them.
Like a retail thing.
No, like it was retail. It was like kind of like a wholesale deal, right?
Okay, yeah.
And so I said, yeah, sure.
It wasn't a computer company like building software or something. It was like selling computers.
Like IT, like computer type stuff. And so like I said, yeah, sure. So like, you know, I went to work for them. It was out of their house and it was in the basement, like they had like sort of the tech lab type thing, and got started there, like just building computers and, you know, slapping RAM in them and hard drives and stuff. Like. And, you know, like I was making like good money at the time. So, you know,
the business was
doing really well. It was expanding really quickly. So I did that for a couple of years and, you know, I said, well, you know, I got to go back to school. I got to finish something. And so I went and did graphic design at Algonquin.
Okay.
And that was great. And then I went back to work for these guys again. Did that for another few years. And
at the same role, like just building computers? Or?
Yeah, but they'd grown like in my absence.
Yeah.
And so like it went back. I was like, you know, whereas like I was like the technician.
Yeah.
I was like, now I'm managing the tech department.
Okay.
You know, so I was able to hire a few friends. And,
cool. I mean, how many people were we talking, like employee-wise?
Yeah, like 8 or 9.
That's pretty good. Yeah,
it was a good going business for a while. Cool, and that sort of got through like all the way through like Y2K type thing. Did pretty well there. And then, you know, I just sort of, another opportunity presented itself with a startup and went to work for them for a couple of years. And then of course the tech implosion happened.
Yeah.
So I found another job with a larger tech company, worked for them for years. And then, you know, they got acquired a couple of times during that process. It was pretty crazy. At the end of it, I was married by that time. My wife was pregnant. My ex-wife now was pregnant. And so I was able to take some time off at the end of that and spend it with my kid. And that was, geez, 2005. They did a bit of consulting then. And then that led to a full-time position.
Cool. I'm gonna hold you right there.
Okay. Sorry.
We're gonna interrupt you just briefly to do some unpaid advertisements. But I definitely want to pick up on this on this thread of where we're going. So we'll be right back. We're talking with Dave Hicks here. Some episodes are better than others for these transitions, and today is not one of those days.
Sorry. I was doing this all for Sarah.
Yes. Exactly. So we're gonna do some unpaid advertisements. We'll be right back with Dave Hicks. All right, and now for a segment called Unpaid Advertisements. If you don't know what the deal is, go listen to past episodes and you'll know what the deal is. Okay, I have gone through, and I'm sure you have gone through, many iterations of bags that you carry to work.
No.
No,
I've had the same bag for like 10 years.
Oh, crazy. Okay.
And it's starting to fall apart and I can't find a good replacement for it.
As a side unpaid advertisement, what bag do you have? What kind of bag do you have?
It's from a company called Blur that's out in BC.
Okay.
But they don't make bags anymore.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm about to advertise another BC bag company.
Well, I'm listening intently here, Casey.
Okay, so I've gone through many iterations of bags that I use for work. I used to have this like laptop briefcase thing that my work gave me, and then they replaced that with like a laptop backpack, which was like just came with the Dell computers at the time, so I wore that for a while. When I started working on my own, my wife got me a super stylish Coach Messenger bag, and that was cool. I love that bag for ages. Actually, I wore that pretty much probably a good chunk of Bite Size's like existence, so maybe 5-6 years. I wore this like Coach Messenger backpack or Messenger bag, super stylish, but one-sided, can give you some shoulder issues. And I started having shoulder issues, which I think might have been attributed to the bag. So I started to investigate into new bags, and eventually I settled on that guy. For those who can't see this, I'm pointing to my bag, which is a Herschel. So if you guys are looking for great bags, whether it be for day travel, for full travel, for your work, check it out, Herschel Bags. They are a Vancouver-based company, which I didn't know until recently, until I actually bought them. They're very stylish. They're very hip. They're like everywhere now. Like all the kids are wearing them now. They're quite reasonably priced. I got my backpack for about $130. So not the cheapest thing, but not the most expensive thing either. So check it out, Herschel, Herschel.ca.
URLs just don't work in a podcast world.
We'll link them in the show notes. All right, Dave, do you know what the problem or one of the main problems with smartwatches is today?
I'm going to say battery life.
That is one of the problems. But my number one problem with smartwatches is that they look like smartwatches. They look like little computers on your wrist and they don't look very good. Google kind of did what's that company? Some company that makes Android Wear watches.
Fossil?
Yes, Fossil. Exactly. Fossil makes some pretty stylish looking watches that don't really look like smartwatches. Withings kind of has that as well. But ultimately, there's something about them that still doesn't look like a great classic stylish watch. Well, there is a company out there that is making what are called hybrid watches. So they're not quite full smart. They don't have a full display. They don't have all the stuff with that. But they're smart in the sense that they do connect to your phone. They vibrate when you get notifications. They do little things where they put like both the hands towards the 9 or to the 3 or whatever to indicate certain types of notifications. They have controls to pause and play your smartphone and all the stuff like that. And they're really stylish. They look like a really nice, luxurious watch. They are a company called Chronobe. Have you heard of Chronobe?
I have not.
Yeah, Chronobe watches. I'm so tempted to get one, but they are still quite expensive. They are expensive watches. They are like a nice piece of jewelry, but they do look really nice. So Chronobe watches, check them out. Chronobe. Chronobe watches. Check them out. If you're in the market for a watch, a smartwatch, definitely check them out. Chronobe.com. All right. And we are back here talking with Dave Hicks. Those unpaid advertisements started off so strong. And then once I announced it, it just fell off because I wrote the intros.
You got all the notes right there.
And then I just stopped after I introduced it. So, all right, we're back talking with Dave Hicks. Dave Hicks was giving us a little bit of a summary of his life.
Complete history.
Yes. And I think where we stopped was basically you had a kid.
Yep.
And was it after you started working for a company that went through a couple acquisitions and stuff?
That was after.
Okay. What were you doing at that bigger company that went through all those acquisitions?
I was like a partner marketing manager.
Okay. So you'd gone into marketing by that point.
Yeah. So I went from sort of tech and then sort of slowly converted that into marketing because, right, you know, I was working for smaller companies and, you know, you need to do marketing and sales work and there was really nobody else to do it.
Was it something that interested you or just something?
Yeah. Well, I said like I had a background in design, yeah, and that sort of thing. So I was like, yeah, I can do this. So like, you know, you go to a trade show and I ended up doing like the trade show swag or, right, you know, designing the booth or whatever. And that sort of led to some more formal marketing roles. So I did that for a while. As I said, worked for a company, got acquired a couple of times. It was always a challenge. And then eventually the final acquisition, they wanted me to move to Baltimore in Maryland. And as I mentioned before, my folks eventually got moved down there. I'd stayed here in Ottawa. Mm-hmm. I had really no interest in moving to Baltimore. Anybody who's watched The Wire, it's all true.
I have not.
But. Yeah, it's anyway, so I just didn't want to move down there at that time in my life. So yeah. I stayed here, took my buyout, my package, and it allowed me to take some time off. As I said, I was married at the time, now divorced, but and we're expecting. So, you know, I did a bit of consulting work, took some time off, did some dad stuff, and eventually took a consulting gig that led to a full-time position and in marketing, and did that for a couple of years.
Like, was the consulting work that you were doing at this time, was it all kind of marketing consulting stuff?
Yeah, like mostly marketing type work.
Right.
For technology companies. Like, I guess the one common thread through like my career has been a focus on tech.
Right.
And I think that's not so much about, you know, the ability to do things in other sectors, but just like that's where you know people.
Right.
And, you know, we spoke about this earlier, like, you know, Ottawa is kind of a weird city. Like it's a big city, but it's kind of a small city. And there's a lot of common threads, you know, and the threads are people. Like it's always the same people over and over again.
Yeah.
You know, occasionally I'll run into somebody and, you know, oh, I'm working here with so-and-so. I'm like, oh, I used to know that guy when he was at Nortel. Or,
well, you know, Jason Connell that we just hired?
Yep.
He seems to be connected to like everybody, like every company we end up approaching is like, oh yeah, I know that person, or I went to school with that person.
Well, so I mean, like I knew Jason before he came working for
yeah,
you,
yeah, exactly.
But I knew him through Twitter. And that, okay. Like when I started, so we're jumping ahead a bit here, but when I started working on my own,
yeah,
you know, I'm at home, I'm working from a kitchen table type situation. And I'm going insane. You know, it's like middle of winter. You're very isolated. It's not like super busy, so like, you know, I have a lot of free time, and like yeah. Twitter was just sort of cresting at that time. Like we're talking 2009,
right.
2010. And so like to me, like Twitter sort of became my water cooler.
Okay.
And I, you know, it's hard now when we think about what Twitter is and sort of the hellscape of social media as it exists in 2019. But it was like, it was kind of cool back then. Yeah. It was really fun. I don't know. People were like really open and willing. But I made a real...
Yeah, I feel like you've talked about this before.
I made a real concerted effort. There's a guy on Twitter. He's a local guy. His name is Little Randy.
Okay.
And he's not really active on social media anymore. But he's in like investments. And he was like one of the first people I sort of met like face-to-face. But he had made a really concerted effort to grow his business through Twitter. But he did that by sort of following people locally. And so that's sort of what I did. I also made like a concerted effort to not just like, you know, interact with people on social media, but like those people that I met through social media, met with like air quotes around it, but actually like, you know, try to meet them in real life.
Right. What was the motivation there? Was it a business growing thing, or was it purely just like you want to meet people? You want to like...
I think initially I thought, oh, you know, if I really promote myself on social media, that'll be great for business. But they sort of discovered that, A, it gets very tiring.
Right.
And you sort of lose the authenticity, you know, because, you know, selling your business, you sort of want to present a certain face, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that was just kind of boring to me.
Right.
So it was just more like, yeah, this is who I am. This is what I do, you know, and I can swear and curse. But what happens is I think people sort of would learn organically sort of what you do. You would meet people who do other things, and you could sort of connect with them. And I said, like, I took one step further, which is like, try to just go, let's go grab a coffee or grab lunch or something like that. And again, talking about that now, it's like, why would you want to meet anyone from Twitter? It's
yeah, yeah, exactly.
Crazy place full of Nazis. But, you know, back then it was actually something that was possible,
yeah.
and good. And so like I met a lot of really cool people that way, and built like a pretty decent following, and actually like got some work in social media because of that.
Right.
And, you know, a few other small jobs. And like, I still to this day say that like, very rarely does someone randomly just show up and say, oh, you know, I want to hire you to do something because I follow you on Twitter.
Yeah.
But like it's certainly from like a referral perspective or just having your name out there. And, you know, as you've mentioned, like, you know, other people sort of will mention, oh, I know a guy who does that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it has been, I think, very beneficial from that perspective.
Right, right, right. So at that time when you started to, I mean, again, you were you consulting at this point?
Oh, yeah, I was. Yeah.
So I kind of want to get to that point, which is when you decided to kind of break off on your own, was it a conscious decision of like, okay, that's it, I'm done with companies, I just want to work for myself and go forward, or did this kind of organically happen?
No, pretty much. Like I worked for a company during that period of time. The CEO that hired me got deposed.
Okay.
And then they hired a new guy who I didn't really like him at all.
Yeah.
During like the hiring process. I'm not going to use names, but because they're a local company.
Let's spill the tea. No, it's not that kind of podcast.
Whatever. I'm sure he doesn't have a very high opinion of me either. But anyway, so at the end of the day, myself and a few other managers ended up getting merged into the office and got our walking papers.
Oh.
You know, at that point, keep in mind that the previous company I had gone through a bunch of turmoil in terms of buyouts and things like that. I just got a job, you know, that I worked very hard at for a couple of years. And, you know, essentially at the end of the day, someone can just come and take that all away from you.
Right.
And I sort of decided, you know, like, I don't want to do that again. I'd rather die with my boots on doing my own thing.
Right.
And
it was a lot of the politics then. Because, like, did you actually enjoy the, like, besides, like, what was happening with acquisitions and change of management and stuff like that, did you actually enjoy the work that you were doing, though?
Oh, yeah. Like, I've been very fortunate, like, to always have, like, I think, really rewarding, like, jobs.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, you know, circumstances outside of your control.
Yeah.
you know, you can't control if your company gets bought by another company in Baltimore.
Right.
That's just business.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm not angry about it, but it's just frustrating that, you know, you can work somewhere and have a job that you enjoy and then you can just change and drop
right,
a hat.
Right, right, right.
Whereas at least now, like, you know, every single problem I have in my business is something that I can control
yeah.
or ultimately blame myself for. So either I live with it or I can fix it. And there's none, you know, there's no external influence. Like, it's just, you know, I only have myself to blame.
So when you kind of hit this motivation point where you're like, no, I'm going to do this. Did you know what you were going to do? Like, did you have in mind like what you were going to?
Yeah. So I was sort of like, oh, you know, oh, at the time I was like working in a senior marketing role. So it's like, oh, you know, I'll focus on like doing strategy type work.
Okay.
And that's good. That's sort of in my wheelhouse, something I enjoy doing. And I did this like in 2008, just as the global financial crisis was starting.
I thought you were going to say on the cusp of social media exploding, but no, this financial crisis, right?
Just as the bottom fell out of the world. So, you know, it was sort of just bad timing.
Did you feel it? Like when it was just really hard to get clients and stuff and like,
yeah, it was a bit of a challenge. The first year actually wasn't so bad.
Okay.
But like years two and three were really tight. And so I, you know, you come out and you start your business and, you know, things are going okay. And then like the financial crisis hits and then like, there's a lot of other people like you who are now unemployed
right.
because their companies scaled back and marketing and sales are always the first to go
yeah,
type
yeah.
situation. So like now I'm competing with a bunch of other people doing the same job
okay.
and the audience is smaller. And also at that time, like Ottawa was sort of undergoing a shift as well, which had sort of started way back in 2000. Like there used to be a lot of like small and medium sized companies in Ottawa doing things
right.
and there still are, but like they've sort of gone away and we have a lot of branch offices. You know,
right.
And you know, they're doing their planning and marketing and strategy work, you know, in New York or Texas or whatever. I just didn't have access to the right people in those organizations. So, you know, short of just cold calling all day, which as you know, we go back earlier, is like, I hate doing that type yeah. of work. Just wasn't going to happen.
Was that, I mean, I'm assuming you didn't expect it, but like when you started your business, did you have some pretty good ideas about how to actually build it and how to get clients and all this stuff or?
I'd done like contract work
yeah.
on and off, like over like the last 3 or 4 years prior to that. And you know, that had always been good.
Right.
But it said like, you know, nobody expects the global financial crisis.
yeah, exactly.
And so like, it was a bit of a slog at the beginning. What happened yeah. during that though was I go talk to people and, you know, I'm networking and doing all the good stuff that you're supposed to do to help grow your business. And people are like, well, you know, we're not really looking for strategy, but what we are looking for is like someone to do an email template for us or
right.
we need to do this landing page or whatever. And so what happened was I'd say, okay, well, I don't really do like those things. I sort of convinced myself I wanted to stick at sort of like a high level, you know,
totally.
Strategy type thing, but said, you know, I can get that done. And I would hire like a contractor to do it.
Okay.
And then after sort of getting stuck high and dry with people either just not doing a good job or just abandoning the project and then me having to finish it at the 11th hour, I said, well, maybe I'll just do it myself next time.
Yeah.
And so I started doing more of that sort of hands-on sort of tactical work, you know, building the web page, you know, building, you know, the WordPress site or what have you.
I mean, what was your skill level at that point? Was it?
I mean, it wasn't great.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I would say that like I had a willingness to learn and
yeah.
that was sort of what kept me going. Like,
because again, your previous jobs were more focused on strategy and high level.
Yeah. Like I always had sort of an awareness of it.
Sure.
And like, you know, like I knew how to do some coding and in HTML and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to go back and look at those first few projects, yeah. you know, so, and, you know, but the thing is like every time you do it, you get a bit better.
Yeah.
And so what happened is over the course of time, sort of my business just through necessity really, shifted, I guess, more from the strategic side into the sort of tactical stuff.
Right.
And I was like, I think a lot market driven, like, you know, I had to take on some like smaller projects, because that was just what was available at the time.
Yeah.
And you know, at that time in business, I was like, well, I'm not too proud to beg type situation. And so what happened though, was like, And I tell people this now, is like, you know, it's always at the beginning of your business where like, well, I don't really want to take something else out of my scope.
Yeah.
But what I discovered is a lot of these small little projects that I really didn't want to do per se actually led to like better work down the road.
Yeah.
You know? So these like build a landing page for somebody, and then a year later you're helping them with a whole web rebuild. And so like that really helped sort of in later on in business. And so, you know,
it's crazy. Cause like, I mean, Bitesight is 7 years in now, and, is only realizing this now. Like that thing you're talking about, like we used to be so hell bent on, we're only accepting like this level of project, you know? And if it's not done this way, we're not going to take it. We're not going to edit somebody else's footage. We're not going to just shoot and hand off for someone else. And it was a really stupid mentality, actually, because now we're starting to like say, okay, like, yeah, anything you want, like we will try to figure it out, or we'll help you out. And like you said, like they're starting to lead to bigger or more repeatable business from our clients.
Yeah. Right? So, I mean, I tell people, like, you know, and we see a lot of new people sort of coming through, like, cause we work in a shared office space,
yeah.
But I tell people all the time, it's like, you know, focus on the customer,
yes.
Not really on the job. Maybe you got to take like a small job or a job that's not really like exactly what you'd like to do, from that customer, but then you've got a customer that trusts you, and yeah. You know, when they need other stuff down the road, they'll come to you to do it. And you know, that sort of has been good for me in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, it's totally, like, because that's the thing. I think like a lot of people like in our space, and I do call it our space because it's like there's, I feel like a lot of people in our space are so like multi-talented. Like they can figure it out. Like it's like if you were given a project that was in some technology that you've never done before, you could probably probably figure it out, because you've done a lot of that, you know, all up till now, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think like if you looked at my resume, it's like, whoa, Dave's like kind of a generalist, and like a lot of people don't like hiring generalists because it's too broad, and you don't have that like sort of, you know, precision needle that goes into like a really deep into a specific skill set. But like, yeah, if you can take something and just like figure it out, and maybe you can do all the different pieces. Oh, you can do the design work, you can do the code work,
yeah.
You can do, you know, that's what a lot of businesses really want. They want someone to solve their problem.
Yeah.
They don't really want a developer, but they certainly don't want to have to hire like four people to do the job. So I find it does like work really well if you've got like a broad skill set to just be able to go, yeah, I can figure this out. We'll get it done. Don't worry.
Well, I like over the last couple of years, I've started to like to develop this kind of, it might be a bit of a cocky attitude, but I've started to develop this attitude about generalists, because I do consider myself a generalist as well. But I actually think sometimes generalists are better than specialists at what specialists are supposed to be good at, because this kind of goes back to your well-roundedness thing, right? It's like, I think the advantage that generalists have is that they can look at some task or some field or some industry and apply like thoughts and concepts outside that industry to that industry, right?
Yeah, so I think the ability to sort of synthesize information and, you know, to draw conclusions and come up with solutions from that is very important. And as a small business owner, you have no choice. Like, you know, you do everything that you need to do in your business.
Yeah.
And some things you do better than others. But like if you only did programming, if that's all you did, I don't mean to pick on programmers here, but like, you know, if you only did programming, but you couldn't do the sales side of it, you couldn't do the marketing side of your business, you know, you'd be dead in the water.
Yeah.
You could be the best programmer in the world, but if you're not capable of getting clients and maintaining them and, you know, selling yourself, you're just not going to go very far. And so like, you have to be a generalist to succeed, I think, in your own business.
Yeah.
And if you want to be a specialist in something, then maybe you should be working for somebody else.
Yeah. So 2008, again, financial crisis hits, you kind of survived through that. And have you basically been doing the same job since then?
No, I mean, my job changes every day.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, so I mean, I got really sort of focused more and more on the development side of things, because there was just a demand for it, and it was easy. I was getting like referral work all over the place. And then sort of made a conscious decision a couple of years ago to pull back a little bit, and focus more on that strategy element a little bit more. And you know, that's sort of where I'm at today. I still like predominantly do like web development work, but I do a bit of design work. I do some strategy stuff, and then I have sort of some other projects.
Right.
And then like I also have like on the side, like I've got my own little projects that I'm working on, but like they never get finished.
Right. I So, I mean, we've kind of talked about this in the past, and I mean, maybe your mind changes obviously over time, but, you know, something that I've talked to you in the past, something that's kind of different between my business and your business is basically the team size, right? Like, I'm kind of concentrated on adding people, like, to build, like, a company, and you seem pretty, like, set on that you want this to be yourself, right? Is that true, or is that, and why, I guess?
I've certainly, like, looked at scaling up,
yeah.
And, you know, there's opportunity there for that, but then you got to focus on, like, managing your team, and, like, I mean, I see you, like, you know, you manage your team, and I think you do a really good job on it, but, like, you spend quite a bit of time on that.
That's all, yeah.
You know, and so it's, like, there's that awkward point in the middle where it's, like, well, I got to dedicate the time and expense of hiring people and managing them that I'm not going to be bringing revenue in, and do I want to go through that? And then also the other challenge is finding people, you know, and who do you hire first, who do you hire second, and can you find and retain those people? And so I've just sort of made a decision that right now, like, I'm busy,
yep.
I'm happy where I'm at,
yep.
As far as business goes, you know, and if I took on, like, additional staff, it's just going to be more work and probably end up making less money,
yep.
at the end of the day. I have a friend of mine who, you know, years ago expanded dramatically, like went from like 3 people to 15.
Oh, wow.
And ran that for like 2 years and basically, you know, almost killed themselves.
Wow.
Just, you know, they were so busy. But he says, like, during those 2 years, I wasn't really making any more money. I had like 10 times the stress, you know, 10 times the work.
Yeah.
Revenues are up, but like my expenses are also through the roof.
Yeah.
And then he sort of made a decision like just to slowly let people go through attrition and pared his business back to like 4 or 5 people. And he's like, oh, I've never been happier because,
yeah.
you know, he's like, I don't really have to spend as much time managing all these people. And I can focus on doing what I want to do. And I said, he's got fewer people, but he's making more money at the end of the day. His revenues are down,
yeah.
but his actual profits are up quite
yeah.
a bit. So,
I mean, it kind of goes to my next question, which is maybe a little bit, maybe a little bit big. But I mean, so what is it that drives you to do what you're doing right now? Like, I mean, like what, like you said, you're happy doing what you're doing. Like what is your goal with your work generally? Is it to give you the life that you want? Is it to work on certain types of projects? Is it to make a certain amount of money? Like, what is it that drives you in your work?
I mean, I'm not super driven by the monetary side of it. I mean, I live comfortably. I have the things I like. You know, I'm not like living in a marble house or taking trips everywhere. But I think, like, for me, it's the flexibility and also like lack of stress. I talked about it before. Is like, even when I was working for other people and things were good, it was always like, you know, there's always something, there's deadlines, there's pressure, you're working on the weekends. And I do that all the time as a self-employed business person, but it's all because of me. Like, it's not someone else saying, oh, you got to come in on Saturday. It's like, I'm going to go in on Saturday versus you have to come in on Saturday.
Yeah, yeah.
Two very different statements and, you know, how you feel about that. So I think, like, for me, it's the flexibility and just the control over what I'm doing. It's nice to sort of, you know, choose the work that I'm doing, who I work with. And another big part of it is, like, I really do enjoy doing what I do. And so I get a lot of satisfaction out of my work.
Yeah.
You know,
like the work itself, like the coding and the marketing and the
yep.
strategizing.
You know, like, I have one of my clients is the Mary Dairy here in Ottawa. I've done a lot of different branding elements for them.
Yeah.
Like, they built they have a truck, so I did a wrap for them. I've, you know, when they built a store, I did like exterior signage.
Yeah.
I've done all the labeling for their products. And it's just sort of nice. Like, I can go in there and, you know, take my kids in there.
Yeah.
And like, that's my product.
Well, that's a cool thing about talking about you and your clients. Like, when like I'll mention something and be like, oh yeah, I built that, or I did this, or whatever. They're actually like stuff that people in Ottawa have heard of, right? Like,
yeah, it's really cool too. Like, when other people mention that they saw your stuff.
Yeah.
So like, that's just sort of like, it's very satisfying to see that out in the wild.
Yeah.
And like, just a physical manifestation of something that you've poured your time into is kind of cool.
Yeah. We talked in the past about, you know, opportunities that you've had to take on, you know, longer term contracts and stuff like that. Do you ever think in the future that what you're doing right now, like, will fizzle out and that you'll take kind of go back to like a 9-to-5 job or a kind of more like working for other people, or?
It's come up a few times, a couple of opportunities have come up and just never seems to pan out at the end of the day. I don't know if that's just because I've been sort of, you know, living in the wild for too long. I can never be tamed again. You know, but I keep my mind open to it. I have taken like longer term contracts, like as part of like freelance work. So I'm not against it per se, but you know, it seems now that the default state is to sort of continue doing freelance work. And, you know, if that changes in the future, then it changes. But for now, let's keep on trucking.
Right. I mean, you've kind of carved out what seems to be a pretty steady life now. I mean, you were moving around a lot as a kid. You know, you dropped out of high school, came back, dropped out of university, you know, and you bounced around corporate companies, and now you have your own business, and things seem to be kind of like working for you, what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, the most consistent, longest run I've had doing anything is working for myself. I don't know if that's a, you know, and certainly like day to day, like, you know how it is, like everything changes all the time. But like, this is the longest I've worked for something in my life, so.
What's next for you?
I don't know. Well, speaking of moving, I just moved like yesterday. So I've got, I got to get unpacked and get all organized there. I got to get my internet working at home. The guy came by this morning, but when I left to come in here for this, I still hadn't got it set up yet. So I got to go back to my IT roots and solve my my mystery internet problems.
I think it says something about the state of life that you're in. If the answer to what's next is I got to get my internet set up, means you're probably pretty happy with where you are. So
yeah, I mean, it's a, and you know, I lost a couple of days this week just with the move. So it's going to be a little crazy. And, you know, going back to this, like, you know, coming in on Saturday, I was like, well, I was just talking to Eric here. It's like, well, maybe I'll come in on Saturday. Is there going to be space, or there, you know, going to be someone coming in to do something else? He's like, oh no, you can come on in. So, you know, I might come in and work on a Saturday and just to catch up on things and keep on going.
That's awesome. All right, Dave, we are pretty much running out of time here, but I do really want to thank you for stopping by. You know, I've really very much enjoyed our conversations over the years. I do consider you an intellectual peer of mine. Like when we talk, I feel like we're talking on the same level, we're talking the same language, and we're not dumbing down anything for each other. So I really appreciate all the conversations we have. And I very much appreciate in the middle of your move, when you're lacking internet, that you decide to spend an hour with me here and being my season finale guest. So really appreciate it.
Well, I hope you learned a bit more about me, because apparently I was just a big mystery man.
You were. You definitely were. So anything else to say before I close things off?
No, that's it. I appreciate you having me on. And I said, I'm here today not only to do the show, but also because there is internet in the office. So when we finish up here, I'm going to go off and check my email.
Before I forget, I do want to, on that note, thank Eric and my Byword office. So many times they've helped us out with finding space, and very much appreciate all the space that they've given us to record all these episodes in season one. So that is it, guys. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email me at casey.lee@gmail.com. That's casey.lee@gmail.com. Or send me a tweet at caseylee23. You can also visit our website at www.caseylee.com/podcast. Casey Talks to People is currently hosted on Anchor FM and distributed to all your favorite platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Spotify, and more. Don't forget to subscribe and leave reviews if you can, and you can even leave a voice message on our website. Don't forget to check out 23 by Jimmy Eat World. It's a great track. But as for now, that is it for season one of Casey Talks to People. I really want to thank everybody for tuning in and all the support I've been getting. I'm really excited for season two. That is it for episode 24, September 19th, 2019, Casey Talks to Dave Hicks. Thanks everybody for listening all season. We hope you enjoyed it, and we'll see you guys in the next season. Thank you.